Welcome back to another episode of the Brackish Fly. Today is episode 1, 2, 3, 4 of this season, and got a pretty cool guest lined up coming from the mid south east area. Anyway, you'll enjoy hearing some of the species Jonathan Payne fishes for. Been following him for a while. He's a pretty cool dude, and I gotta say, his social media makes me pretty jealous watching some of the stuff that he catches on fly. So, how you doing, man?
Good. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm great, man. Great. I'm excited to have you on, dude, because I've been following your social media for a while, and I gotta say, I'm very impressed, like, with what all you catch, and yeah, and now that I'm into fly fishing, like, it's much more meaningful. It was cool before, but now it's like, oh man, that is really cool.
Yeah, once you know
what it takes to do it.
For them, yeah, exactly. You know, with the fly rod, it's just a different, you know, just a whole different challenge.
So, for anyone that doesn't really know who you are, can you give us like a 30-second rundown, just brief? You know, who is Jonathan Payne?
Okay. Yeah, I live in Elkins, West Virginia. It's heart of Appalachia, kind of the mountain areas of West Virginia, pretty central, right near the ski resorts area. So, you know, you've got mountains, which is fresh water. Yeah, we got a lot of snow right now, but that also brings a lot of trout fishing opportunities, and further downstream, a lot of great smallmouth bass fishing. And, you know, I made up with all types of fishing, but probably for at least a good decade, I was a trout bum, hardcore, fly fishing only. And I was just ate up with it. Now I've definitely branched out to all types of fishing, all kinds of techniques. I love going up and down Appalachia and just exploring all the different species, big multi-species angler here. Yeah. And, I just, you know, we were just talking about saltwater, before the podcast, and, you know, I'm getting into that now too. So I like a new challenge, and I think that's why I really have enjoyed fly fishing, because it definitely is a challenge.
Absolutely, man. It's, so technique specific, like chunking streamers or dries, or, it's so different, but it's so rewarding and so different, you know, just, it's a different skill set. And I'm not proficient at it. I've only been doing it for 2 years, but man, there's something about slinging a big streamer and a fish eating it.
Yeah.
And that's me, man. I love chunking streamers.
Yeah. Yeah. You're, I think what they call the streamer junkie.
Yeah. Something like that. So I had to quit using the weighted ones because I kept having to dig hooks out of me. But yeah, my casting has gotten better now, though.
That's good. Yeah, you got to watch the rod tips, too, with a lot of those weighted streamers.
So. Yeah, I've smacked it a few times, but gotten lucky so far. All right, so, man, tell me some of your favorite species that you fish for.
Right now, you know, I'm really into smallmouth bass fishing, probably because, you know, I'm in love with my vibe. Kayak, yeah. And it's taken me to all kinds of new waters, and but I also fish from rafts. We have a lot of white water up here, a lot of rocky rivers, freestone, so you know, you can't just take a drift boat down the river, or you know, even a motor boat, you know, a nice cushy raft is a must at times.
Yeah.
And so bass, you know, I like to get out and float, get away from crowds, or, you know, just to enjoy the nature, beauty of West Virginia, all that. So, species that kind of brings along trout, smallmouth bass. And I would say the other one is probably muskie. I really enjoy going after muskie at times.
Yeah.
Yeah. but with trout, you've got, you know, we've got the really small creeks, the native brook trout streams.
Yeah.
Brook trout's native to the mountains here. And, sometimes I just like to find a, you know, we call them a blue line, because mm-hmm. they're these small little blue lines on a map, and yep. just go to the national forest and go explore. You got to be very stealthy and catch brook trout. And then we've got, you know, larger streams where you have more match the hatch type fly fishing for rainbow and brown trout.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned the brook trout. So someone that does it often, I do have a question about this. So recently I was in the Appalachians and I wanted to catch brook trout. I had a two weight and I finally found them on a dry fly bite. They were, I think the first one I caught, it ate a stimulator, like a size 12 or 14 stimulator. But I couldn't really get many bites. And then I went to a size 16 elk hair caddis and was getting smoked. It seemed like every pool they were eating it. But I couldn't find the fly. Like, when by the time I seen them hit it, like, my line was all looped up. Like, I couldn't even see the fly to watch what was going on. How do you do that? Like, with that fast current, how do you watch a small dry fly?
It's tough. Because a lot of times the current will give that, you know, kind of that, those white foamy bubbles.
Yeah.
And so what I've done with a lot of my flies that I tie, I'll add a little bit of color to an indicator.
Okay.
To kind of differentiate, especially with an elk hair caddis, because, you know, it, a lot of that elk hair can be real light in color, so you can kind of lose it in the riffles. So adding a little bit of color helps. But also kind of stripping your line back with one hand while you're holding the rod. That way you don't have a lot of slack in the line when you set the hook.
Okay. That was my problem. I was getting plenty of bites. And when I would set the hook, like I'd had 2 foot of line looped. I was like, oh man, I don't know how people do this, but I was having fun. Like,
yeah. It's not a learning curve. Yeah. It's not just casting, just letting it sit out there. They're very opportunistic. I call them the opportunistic trout. They'll hit the fly, but you know, it's usually quick, especially if they're not so sure of it. So you've definitely kind of like mending, you know, across the stream. This is, you're kind of retrieving that fly line, so you're taking the slack out of it.
I couldn't believe the little 6 or 7 inch brook trout that I caught ate like a size 12 stimulator. It was a big stimulator.
Sounds like it. So yeah, they're eager. When you find a hatch, you know, they can kind of key in on that. And sometimes those larger flies, a lot of them can shy away. Mm-hmm. And that's probably why I had a little more success with the smaller fly.
But, I noticed that. That's why I changed the smaller. I seen some come up and like look at it, but they wouldn't eat it. So I was like, I'm going smaller. So
right. Yeah, that's, if you're not catching a lot of fish with trout, that's always my number one rule of thumb is go smaller.
So are you, where you're located, I'm guessing you can catch all those species within, say, maybe an hour drive from where you're at?
Oh, not even that. Probably 10 minutes, oh, 5 minutes. Goodness.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, we've got a smallmouth stream running through Elkins, the Tigert River. Mm-hmm. It's got muskie in it as well, catfish, a lot of warm water species, we call them. And then the tributaries that dump into that and some of these other larger river systems just over a mountain, they're all trout based. So definitely a great area. I moved to this area because I was ate up with so much trout fishing, you know, years ago. There's just a lot of great opportunity. Any direction that you travel, you can catch trout or multiple types of species.
That's awesome, man. That's super cool to have, especially you talk about muskie. Now, talk a little bit about that on the fly. How is it? Are they harder to catch on fly than on conventional?
Yeah, I was actually determined to catch my first muskie on a fly rod. And it was something that I just set a goal for myself. It was a great challenge. Zach Atkins on our vibe team, you know, he was in the boat with me a lot of these times. And I was just wearing out my arm and my shoulder, my back, just casting these giant bucktail streamer flies. And I mean, I don't know if you've seen these musky flies, but they can be over a foot long.
Oh, they're huge.
And yeah, I mean, now there's better materials where they repel and shed the water, but back then it was a lot of bucktail, and it can wear you out. So, yeah.
What weight rod are you throwing on?
I've got a 10 and 11 weight for rod for those.
Wow.
And they make, like, Reddington and some other brands, they make, you know, Esox rods, mm-hmm. those type of edition rods that are specialized in that. So you don't have to go that heavy. It's nice to have that extra backbone. I know guys that have caught them on, you know, 7 and 8 weights, but it's just a little bit easier, you know, when you casting something, you know, that can cast that fly a little bit better, right. further out. Right. Yeah. But I finally did it. It took a while. Actually, another story about a fishing friend of ours that, you know, had a tragedy. And he was a big musky fisherman. And I just wanted to, it was kind of part of that story. I just wanted to make sure that I ended up catching a musky, but I wanted to challenge myself to do it on a fly rod before I switched over to hardware. You know, I'll call it the gear, conventional mm-hmm. gear, a lot of hardware. So
yeah,
did it. It was 40 inches, and it was just, you know, it was one of my more memorable fishes ever.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
That's a big
yeah.
one. Yeah. Yeah. I was in a yeah. fly shop in Tennessee, and one of the guys in there, we were just, you know, shooting the breeze, and he was like, man, yeah, I caught some muskie like last week. And I was like, really? I was like, you got the flies? I want to see the flies. And he showed them to me, and he was tying like these sucker patterns that were like 14 and 16 inches long and like multiple hooks. And he was like, yeah, man, this is what I'm using for muskie. I'm like, dude, I'm not even targeting fish that big. Like, so yeah. Yeah, he was slinging them on a, I think he said a 9 weight, if I remember right. But yeah, I was just, that's the first musky fly I've actually seen in person. I was like, man, that's just big. That's big.
Yeah, most of them are articulated. And then, yeah. you know, with Blaine Chocolate coming out yeah. with the Game Changer, it really, some of these flies are just crazy. I've got a fly that resembles a golden trout, or mm-hmm. a lot of people up north of us call it a Palomino trout.
Yeah, yeah.
That the Natural Resources state will stock. And, you know, they're like, they're walking ducks, you know,
yeah.
for muskie.
Yeah.
You know, they don't stand a chance. So I like to throw that a lot too.
Yeah. I bet they do key in on that. Yeah. Especially something different. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they just sit out there and they glow.
Yeah. Well, hey man, let's take a break real quick and we're going to jump back in and talk flies. So.
Sure.
All right, well, we're back and we're going to talk flies now. We left out talking about musky, and so let's talk about some of the flies you're using. What's in your box typically on a day of fishing?
I wish I had just one box. being a fly tire,
yeah.
I've got multiple boxes and way too many boxes. So I usually carry what I call the fly shop with me when I,
yeah,
you know, go out to fish. And once I get there, I try to just grab. I've got everything organized into, you know, different types of flies, throw them in the pack and go. But it depends on the stream and the species, of course. If we say I'm going to go target trout, brook trout, I like to have a lot of, you know, basic buoyant dry flies mm-hmm. and a lot of basic nymph patterns, some flashy flies, something colorful at times, more attractor flies. And a lot of foam flies too. Sometimes I use those as an indicator, and yeah. I'll drop a nymph rig below it, and you'll be surprised how many fish, you know, your catch rate will definitely go up fishing a dry dropper rig is what we call them.
Yeah. Do you do two nymphs on it, or just one, or just situational?
In a big river, I'll use an indicator with a dual nymph rig mm-hmm. system. If they're hitting emergers or dry flies, I may tie a dry fly with a merger, you know,
yeah,
12 to 18 inches up below it, or a nymph below it as well.
Yeah.
So
all those techniques, man, are really new to me as far as trying them out. And they actually work down here on our warm water species. on like
really
yes, cool. Especially red spotted sunfish, man. It you gotta try out them those fish one day. They're super aggressive, like, and absolutely, they'll take everything that a trout will.
That's awesome. Some of my favorite flies, though, nymph flies, you know, I've got my own patterns for that I like to throw that probably never people haven't really heard of before, but the classic pheasant tail, it's one of the best nymphs out there. It resembles so much, and fish love it. I've never been to a stream where, you know, they're going to pass up a pheasant tail.
Yeah.
Keep it simple. A lot of times I'm a big believer of it's more about your presentation than the size, the color, the fly, all of that. Of course that can change what body of water you're on, or, you know, some of the more selective streams.
Yeah. Now, are you tying most of your own flies, or what's your percentage?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd say in my box, there's a couple flies. You know, I like to go support local fly shops, and we'll do fly swaps with friends. Mm-hmm. So I'd say about 90% of my flies are ones that I tie. Dry fly, my go-to is a Parachute Adams, and okay, I just change the body, you know, use different colors of dubbing, mm-hmm, and it can resemble so much.
Yeah. It's kind of one of those do-it-alls.
It is. It is. And it, especially if you're on a good spinner fall with the mayfly in the evening, it has that presentation where the body of the fly is kind of in the film, and it looks like spent, you know, like a spent mayfly, what they're keying in on. So, and it's also got a great indicator. You know, my eyes aren't getting any better the older I get. So yeah, it's an all around great fly. They're fun to tie. And you can drop flies off of it. It works great.
That's awesome. So what are some of the you know, the setups that you're using? We've been talking more about trout. So what's your favorite rods to use on trout?
Well, there was a 9-foot three weight that I was using for a lot of the local waters in West Virginia. It had a right amount of flex for sometimes we have to midge fish up here, mm-hmm, very small hooks. And it had that flex where when you have to use a small fly or very light tippet, when the fish would take off and thrash and make a run, that rod, that flexible rod would absorb it. So there's a Yellowstone, a 9-foot three weight that I got when I was somewhat new to fly fishing. Mm-hmm. And I've always loved that rod. Probably the most versatile rod that I've had lately is the Sage One.
Yeah.
I'll say it's that one rod that you need. You know, I've changed up dry fly to, you know, doing some type of urine nymphing and even throwing a streamer on it. It's a, you know, 9-foot five weight. It's very versatile. And then for the small streams, I kind of splurged one year and a local rod maker made me a bamboo fly rod. And nice. You talk about smooth and silky.
Yeah.
It's the way to go if you're a small creek fisherman.
There's a guy here that makes bamboo fly rods for redfish in like 8 and 9 weights. Dude, they are phenomenal. They are just great.
I would love to check that out.
I would never want to use like a $3,000 rod for redfish. But,
yeah.
Yeah, people do it, and it's just awesome. Yeah.
I bet they take off, and I, you know, I'd really love to check that out.
Yeah. Turner Fly Rods is who it is down here. And I think okay, he ships them all over. They're really, really nice. But he's local to where my shop is, so.
That's great.
So what some of your setups are for smallmouth bass?
A 9-foot, 6 weight is one of them. And I have a 10-foot 7 weight as well.
Are you using floating lines for?
I am for, you know, obviously, you know, throwing poppers, mm-hmm, and anything top water. one of my favorite smallmouth bass flies, I love it to death, is the Sneaky Pete. I don't know if you've ever heard of that fly.
I have, yes.
It's awesome. A lot of people complain that it's boring to fish, but I don't get that tired about it because I'm just anticipating that smallmouth coming up and striking at any minute.
Yeah.
It's so much fun. But I'll use sinking line as well. And Chuck Kraft, he's a great fly tire. The CK baitfish is probably one of my favorite subsurface flies, streamer. And I've even tied some variations of it with kind of a curl chamois tail, you know, to kind of make it look like a grub a little bit.
Yeah.
And, but also that straight tail kind of gives it that fluke action as well. Mm-hmm. And, it's actually, I've won a smallmouth bass, fly fishing tournament with that fly.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So those
are cool.
Yeah. The Sneaky Pete, that's probably one of my go-to top water. Of course, poppers and then bubbleheads. Have you heard of those? They're pretty big in saltwater.
Yep. I have with the big old eyes on them. Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of fun. Leave a nice bubble trail, and then, you know, the Chuck Kraft, the CK bait fish again, and there's a streamer pattern. It kind of looks like tinsel, or you know, like a flashy Christmas tree. It's called the Krillix streamer pattern. Have you heard of that one?
I haven't heard of that one.
Okay, the material is actually made here in West Virginia. In Parkersburg, and I'll have to send you a picture of it, but some of the fly fishermen listening, they'll probably recognize that Krillix streamer.
Nice. I kind of interrupted you, and you were talking about your rod setups for the smallmouth. You said you use a 9 foot 6 weight, and what else was it?
A 10 foot 7 weight.
Okay.
Just if I, you know, in my want some more distance,
mm-hmm.
the water could be very clear, and if I'm in that raft or kayak, we've got to back off a little bit from them. So having that longer rod helps a lot.
Okay.
And if I've got, you know, I'm lucky and somebody's rowing me, and I'm sitting up in the front of the raft or the drift boat, then, you know, if we're kind of cruising down the river and it's a little tighter. You know, obviously a 10 foot 7 weight you don't need. But I've used 9 foot 5 weights for them as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, you hook it to a 20 inch smallmouth, though, it's a different story.
Yeah. I've always told people down here, like the first few smallmouth I caught, like it just, they hooked me. They are just a different animal. And
they are.
I've told people, man, I would trade every redfish we've got for smallmouth.
Yeah, they just don't give up.
They
That's
don't,
the best
man.
Thing about them. They don't give up.
The first ones I caught were on conventional, and then I went back and caught them on fly gear, and like it just mm-hmm. doesn't compare. I don't know of another species that I like better on fly.
Yeah, they're tough to beat. They're all around fun in the winter, in the summer. It's just they're a great fish.
Absolutely. So you mentioned whitewater fishing. I want to kind of get into that and kind of, cause that's something that not a lot of people do.
Definitely not. There's, you know, you've got to have those streams, number one.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're not in the mountains, you may not have, you know, a lot of rocky, rugged boulders, elevation drop. Mm-hmm. So we have that all over West Virginia, some of the best whitewater rafting around. Now I don't take all of my, you know, fishing gear and fishing tackle to a class 5 river, and you know, where you see everybody wearing the helmets and see multiple paddlers. We usually go to sections of that river that are pretty fishy and a little more mellow, but to get to where you need to be, you may have to go through a set of rapids.
That's awesome. Do you record so any of this, like, on cameras or on YouTube or anything?
I haven't put it out on YouTube. Maybe I need to, but I've got some footage I can probably upload. I've got some good pictures, and it's so much fun because it's, you know, you're focusing on fishing, and then all of a sudden it's like, you better not cast again. We need to get our stuff together, you know.
No one more cast. You know,
yeah, right, exactly. Tighten up the life jacket and, you know, sit down and get ready.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you've got to approach that rapid correctly. And, you know, you don't want to be sideways, or, you know, it could be a situation where you don't want to be on that side of the river because you could get pinned over here. So, yeah, you've got to know your water. You've got to, you know, safety first. I talked to Todd West a lot about that on mm-hmm. one of the Vibe podcasts.
Yeah, Taco Tuesdays.
Taco Tuesday. Yep. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. So if you want to hear more information about that, go look up that Taco Tuesday episode up.
Yeah, it's on the Vibe Owners Group for sure. Okay. I'm not sure where else it is. But yeah, I know for sure it's there.
Yeah, it's fun too. It's, you know, hitting some waves, and especially in the summer, it gets kind of hot and humid, and you know, what better way to cool down than getting hit with a wave?
Yeah, that's awesome. We just got rope swings down here.
Yeah, we've got them up here too, but you can have your choice. You can hit a wave
that rocks, or you can, dude. So I'm assuming you don't carry fishing tackle down the river the first time you go down it when you're looking at white water, or do you?
Zach, I fish with him a lot, and you know, we've kind of brought just the bare minimum when we're kind of exploring. And you know, we've been in a situation where we didn't really scout the river well enough. Now there's, I mean, back then it, you know, Google Maps and Google Earth, you know, all these aerial photos, you didn't really have all that. And we just went and chanced it on this one river, and we ended up carrying our watercrafts over some boulders just to be safe. We're like, oh wow, that could be bad.
Yeah.
So, but we kind of carry minimal stuff, 'cause you don't know what you're going to get into. And, you know, if you tip, or if you're in a kayak, or, you know, you have an accident, you never know what's going to happen. You don't want to lose all your gear. You just want to, you know, make sure you scout it very well. Then when you come back the second time, you know how to prepare and what to plan for.
Yeah. Okay. So what are some of your favorite places to fish? Like, I don't want to burn any spots, or, you know, bring a lot of people. I don't think a lot of people would be listening anyway, but you know, I don't want to ruin any spots, but so, yeah.
For smallmouth, there's so many rivers within probably 100-mile radius, 200-mile radius, even over into Virginia. There's, you know, the Shenandoah River over there. We've got the famous New River that starts in North Carolina and ends up, and it turns into a whitewater stream where I'm close to where I'm at in West Virginia. The Cheat River, the South Branch, the headwaters of the Potomac, where Zach's over, you know, we bounce around all over those areas. And then for smallmouth, I love going up to the Susquehanna River in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
It's probably one of the best around. Trout fishing, there's so many great waters in West Virginia as well. But I've also traveled to Tennessee, South Holston. You know, that's a blue ribbon brown trout, you know, wild trout. There's I forget how many
they've got wild trout in there
now. Oh wow.
Yeah. That's just cool. Recently they stocked cutthroat there in the Hiwassee River.
Yeah. So, yeah. Wow. So we've got some cutthroat that borders West Virginia and Maryland in the North Branch of Potomac.
Okay.
I think Maryland puts those in. So
are you close to the Elkhorn?
Elkhorn. Yeah. So that's Southern West Virginia. It's about a little over 3 hours for me.
Okay.
Fish there a lot. Used to go there every winter at least. And It's an anomaly. I call it the eighth wonder of the world.
Yeah, there's so many like strange and bizarre stories about the Elkhorn River in West Virginia.
Yeah, they're probably all true. Yeah. So it's just crazy to me that, you know, you're down in Mississippi and you've heard about Elkhorn.
Yeah, well, man, I'm a huge fly fishing podcast listener, so like I hear all these stories from like all over the country, but
Yeah.
But it is, yeah, it is legendary. Like in some of the smallmouth rivers you've heard of, like, man, they're like, people down here even talk about them. Like the, especially the New River. Like that's,
yeah,
seems to be like the spot to go for people down here anyway.
If you come to West Virginia, it's now a national park. So, you know, I would definitely schedule a trip of rafting or even a trip, you know, somebody can take you out smallmouth fish or musky fish.
Yeah.
I think you'll definitely have a good time.
Absolutely. That sounds great. So, let's take one more break and I'll come back with some blind cast questions.
All right.
And we're back. So here, this is a segment I like to call the blind cast, and it's just kind of some short questions, pretty random. Okay. So what kind of music is on your radio right now?
Charles Wesley Godwin. He is a up-and-coming artist from West Virginia, probably about an hour away from me, Seneca Rocks area. CWG, but I think you can find him, Charles Wesley Godwin. He's got an album named Seneca, his first album. He just released a new one, but I'm telling you, if you like storytelling, kind of a gravelly voice, just really good, authentic, something different, kind of like you heard with Tyler Childers.
Yeah.
Check him out. He's really awesome.
I got to check that out. That's sounds like that's right up my vein there.
Absolutely.
All right, so
Appalachia right there.
Yeah. All right, so speaking of Appalachia, I think this one will hit you good. So Bigfoot, yes or no?
What'd you say Bigfoot what?
Bigfoot, I'm yes sorry. Or no? Do you believe in Bigfoot?
Ooh. I've always laughed, but I'll say yes to keep it fun. I don't know. There's just some stories out there that you never know. But then you see some of the other stuff on TV. It's like, you got to be kidding me.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I don't know. I don't want to be that guy that says 50-50, but I'll keep it fun and just say yeah.
There's some strange things that have happened.
Right.
All right. So favorite on the water snack.
Pepperoni roll.
Nice. The one with the cheese in it?
They were made, that's West Virginia's food. Fairmont, West Virginia is where it originated.
Mm-hmm.
They used to, there's a lot of Italians in that area. And the coal mines of West Virginia, the wives used to make pepperoni rolls for the coal miners to go underground. And, you know, it was kind of like a snack, a lunch. But now they're a delicacy here. People make them all different types, stick, pepperoni, slices pepperoni, and even ground pepperoni can be a big debate up here.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah.
It's crazy, man. My podcasts here lately have been gravitating toward food, and I love it.
Awesome.
Because it's like getting all the local culture and the local food and the different things like that. I've never, you know, regionally, we never hear of it here, so. Yeah, our pepperoni roll is literally like a string cheese with a pepperoni around it. That's what I thought.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, this is dough. This is, you know, kind of like a pizza. Some people put sauce in it, but typically not. Usually it's just dough and pepperoni. You can put pepper jack cheese, you know, whatever your favorite cheese is in there. And then, you know, you bake it and take it out, you know, wherever you need to go. It's great.
Yeah, it absolutely sounds amazing.
So. It sounds simple, but I'm telling you, it's a lot better than you think.
So, okay, do you catch and release all your fish, or do you keep some to eat?
Trout, I would say yes. It depends on the species. Mm-hmm. If I'm camping somewhere and, you know, I'm in a very healthy stream, I try to make sure I'm conscientious of that. But when I camp, you know, it's nice to have a trout every once in a while. Crappy fishing, you know, I'll keep some every once in a while. And then saltwater. I tried redfish on the half shell for the first time. It was awesome.
Yeah.
I was shocked. It was great. So it just depends on the species. But I would say, 95% I'm probably catch and release with the species here in West Virginia, because a lot of them are fragile, and there could be a better population of them, or like the brook trout, they're already struggling.
Yeah. So. Yeah. All right. So, your all-time favorite species to fish for?
I'm torn. The brook trout is West Virginia's state fish and native to Appalachia, but I love the brown trout. They get big, and they put up a heck of a fight, and they're just beautiful fish. But so is the brook trout. But then you got the smallmouth.
Yeah.
That I'm torn. That's a tough one.
I gotta say, from where you're at in the species you've named off, I don't know, man. That's a tough question.
those three, it's a toss up. I mean, I could pick either one of them.
All right. So, what are some of your hobbies besides fishing?
Of course, fly tying. That's kind of fishing. It goes with that. I used to play the guitar. Of course, being up in this area, I used to go skiing and snowboarding, with the ski resorts around.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to think what else I like to get into, but it most of it's fishing.
Yeah. It's funny, man, because a lot of fishermen, especially fly fishermen, like, they talk about hobbies, fly tying. Like,
yeah,
it all kind of revolves around a fish, and I think it's just awesome.
I probably could get into making my own jigs and some lures and stuff. Soft plastics. That seems interesting to me, but I just don't want to start another hobby.
Yeah. Yeah. So your ultimate dream fishing trip?
For the longest time, I've always said Labrador.
Oh, man. The big brook trout?
Way up. Yeah, the big brook trout. I've just thought it'd be neat to catch some of those up there.
Yeah.
But, Patagonia, New Zealand, they're all awesome.
Yeah. I watch a lot of videos coming out of New Zealand, and it's just, it's just silly over there, it looks like.
Yeah, it does.
So you said Labrador. Have you watched the Tight Loops episode where they went up there?
I haven't seen that one yet.
It's incredible. I highly recommend it. It's a film. I think it's called True North or something, but man, it's legit. It is legit.
Okay.
Let's see. Well, shoot, that's kind of all the questions I got on this. So tell me about your kayak that you're using.
So right now, my go-to is the Vibe Shearwater, and I love the pedal drive. It's especially when I went over to the Chesapeake Bay to go red fishing, the tide and the wind, we don't necessarily have a ton of wind where I'm at. It's, when I went to the coast, it was more constant wind. Mm-hmm. And my buddy was in, the Vibe Sea Ghost. And he had it was hard for him to keep his, to try to fish, he had to put an anchor down or a stakeout pole. And, he looks over at me and I'm just there paddling nice and easy, staying in one spot.
Yeah.
Facing the kayak into the wind, and I'm still, fishing, getting all kinds of casts in, probably, at least five casts to his one, because the wind was getting so bad where he would have to adjust. And I was just like, wow, this kayak has helped me so much. Just being able to keep my hands, free of a paddle and fishing, it was a game changer.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that. It seems like I get probably 30% more cast in because of pedals than when I didn't have them.
I agree. I've noticed it on the lakes as well. Not so much the river. The rivers, I'm trying to make sure I approach that next little rapid or, where I need to be, and then I'll kind of move off to the side and, or sitting in an eddy and they cast that way. So, but it's been so helpful, you know, on that flat water, big water where there's a lot of wind and you can just catch yourself drifting away if you're not paying attention.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we do a lot of big water down here in the salt water, and it's just, it's invaluable to have that pedal drive. It's great. Where can people follow you and kind of share along with your adventures?
On Instagram, my handle is The Appalachian Angler.
The Appalachian Angler. All right.
Yep. And if you like multi-species, multi-technique, you know, I'll take a spin rod or a center pin rod. I like to go up to the Great Lakes and catch steelhead and salmon and any of the lake run brown trout. Oh my gosh, they're huge. You've probably seen some of those pictures.
Yes.
And you know, fly fish, and I'll put up pictures of beautiful small creek brook trout or even a big 50-inch muskie.
Oh man, we've got to circle back around, and I got to have you back on in a couple months and talk like specific techniques, man. Especially for
absolutely
like the steelhead awesome. Stuff, man. I seen some pictures you posted not long ago, and it was just some tanks, man. Like I was like,
yeah,
dang, some big
Great
fish.
Lakes. It's so much fun. It really opens up sometimes in the fall when the waters get low here in West Virginia. The steelhead are starting to swim up out of the Great Lakes into these tributaries. And it's just a nice change up, you know, time of year. Right now, everything's frozen up there. But, you know, those transition periods in the fall and spring, it's so much fun to travel up there.
Nice. Well, man, anything else you want to mention? Any other companies you want to shout out or anything else?
Well, any new fly fishermen listening out there, go to a pond, and you know what I used to do when I was starting out. It doesn't matter what fly rod you have, the fish don't care. Find some bluegill, something in a pond that are willing to eat, and practice your cast, practice landing the fish, you know, the hook set, and then bringing a fish in. I remember I hooked a big trout on the stream one time, and I didn't have a lot of practice. Like, okay, what do I put it on the reel or do I start stripping the line in? And, you know, that trout can could turn around and beeline the other way and you can, you know, break off. So there's nothing wrong going out fishing for bluegill, small pond fish, and just perfecting that. It'll tremendously help whenever you, you know, get out to redfish or trout fish or whatever you may be doing.
That is absolutely like invaluable information. Like bluegill are just fun anyway.
They are. They fight pretty good, especially with a light, you know, fly rod. It's
yeah.
They put up a fight.
they're willing. I recorded an episode with Matt Therrell yesterday, which would be last week's episode from now. And he was talking about the first fish he caught on a fly rod was a bass, and he caught a bluegill. That was He was like, man, bluegill was much funner than the bass.
Yeah, they don't give up either.
They're so fun, man. So fun. I love catching. I mean, I don't have trout down here.
Right.
Yeah, I'm always up for a ditch fish. It's a lot of people call it.
It's that fish that we all started out on, you know, the bluegill.
Like a gateway drug.
Yeah.
So, all right, man, I promise you, if you do not follow Jonathan on social media, you want to, because I mean, if you just got to see his pictures and you got to see some of the adventures that he goes on to understand, this dude is awesome in an awesome place and catching awesome fish. So that's it, guys. We are going to head out and we will see you next week on the Brackish Fly. So, all right, Jonathan, see you, man.
Yeah, Jeff, appreciate it. Are you done?
I'm just letting the intro music go out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, we're good, dude. It's all right, guys, see you later.